It had been a sudden strange fancy, but a stupid plan. Now, out here, all the drawbacks were visible. How would she have got Paul home? Would he have wanted to come? Could she have managed it? Even if he was still alive, how could she hope to get him out of a prison? "So you'll be guerrilla fighters, eh?" said Mr. de Worde behind her. "Madmen, all of you." "No, we are not irregulars," said Blouse. "We kissed the Duchess. We are soldiers."
"Oh, well," said de Worde. "Then I admire your spirit at least. Ah, Otto." The vampire iconographer ambled up and gave them a shy smile.
"Do not be afraid. I am a black ribboner, just like your corporal," he said. "Light is mine passion now."
Well done," said Blouse.
"Take the pictures, Otto," said de Worde. "These gentlemen have a war to fight."
"Out of interest, Mr. de Worde," Blouse interrupted. "How did you get the pictures back to your city so quickly? Magic, I assume?"
"What?"
De Worde looked momentarily off balance.
"Oh, no, sir. Wizards are expensive, and Commander Vimes has said that there is going to be no first use of magic in this war. We send things by pigeon to our office in the keep, and then by clacks from the nearest trunk tower."
"Oh, really?"
said Blouse, showing rather more animation than Polly had seen up to now.
"Using numbers to indicate a scale of grey shades, perhaps?"
"Mein Gott!" said Otto.
"Well, yes, as a matter of fact, we do," said de Worde. "I'm very impressed at you."
"I have seen the Clax Towers on the far bank of the Kinnick," said Blouse, his eyes lighting up. "Very clever idea, using big shuttered boxes rather than the old-fashioned semaphore arms. And would I be right in my surmise that the box on the top, which opens its shutters once a second, is a kind of system, a clock, that makes certain the whole Clax line keeps in step?"
"Oh, good. Thought so.
One beat a second is probably the limit of the mechanisms, so no doubt all your efforts now are concentrated on maximising the information content per shutter operation?"
"Yes, I imagine that'll be the case.
As for sending pictures, well, sooner or later all things are numbers, yes? Now, of course, you would use each of the two columns of four boxes to send a grey code, but it must be very slow. Have you considered a squeezing algorithm?"
De Worde and Huyck exchanged a glance.
"Are you sure you haven't been talking to anyone about this, sir?" said the writer.
"Oh, it's all very elementary," said Blouse, smiling happily. "I had thought about it in the context of military maps, which are, of course, mostly white space. So I wondered if it would be possible to indicate a required shade on one column, and on the other side indicate how far along that rank that shade would persist. And a delightful bonus here is that if your map was simply in black and white, then you have even more."
"You haven't seen inside a Clax Tower, have you?" said de Worde.
"Alas, no," said Blouse. "This is simply thinking aloud based on the de facto existence of your picture. I believe I can see a number of other little mathematical tricks to make the passage of information even swifter, but I'm sure these have already occurred to you. And, of course, a fairly minor modification could potentially double the information burden of the whole system at a stroke. And, of course, that is without using coloured filters at night, which I'm certain, even with the overhead of extra mechanical effort, would surely increase throughput by... I'm sorry, did I say something wrong?"
The two men wore a glazed expression. De Worde shook himself.
No, nothing," he said. "And you seem to have got the grasp of things very quickly."
"Though it was quite straightforward once I started thinking about it," said Blouse. "It was exactly the same when I had to redesign the department's filing system, you see. People build themselves something that works. Then circumstances change, and they have to tinker with it to make it continue to work. And they are so busy tinkering that they cannot see that a much better idea would be to build a whole new system to deal with the new circumstances. But to an outsider, the idea is obvious."
"In politics as well as filing systems and claxes, do you think?" said de Worde.
Blouse's brow wrinkled.
"I'm sorry, I don't think I follow," he said.
"Would you agree that sometimes a country's system is so out of date that it's only the outsiders that can see the need for wholesale change?" said de Worde.
He smiled. Lieutenant Blouse did not.
"Just a point to ponder, maybe," said de Worde. "Since you wish to tell the world of your defiance, would you object if my colleague takes your picture?"
Blouse shrugged.
"If it gives you any satisfaction," he said.
It's an abomination, of course, but these days it's hard to find something that isn't. You must tell the world, Mr. De Word, that Borogravia won't lie down. We will not give in. We will fight on. Write that down in your little notebook, please. While we can stand, we will kick.
Yes, but once again, may I implore you to...
Mr. De Word, you have, I am sure, heard the saying that the pen is mightier than the sword.
De Word preened a little.
Of course, and I... Do you want to test it? Take your picture, sir, and then my men will escort you back to your road.
Otto Schrieck stood up and bowed to Blouse. He unslung his picture box.
This will only take 1 minute, he said.
It never does. But Polly watched in horrified fascination as Otto took picture after picture of Lieutenant Blouse in a variety of what the lieutenant thought were heroic poses. It is a terrible thing to see a man trying to jut out a chin he does not, in fact, have.
Very impressive, said De Word. I just hope you live to see it in my paper, sir.
I shall look forward to it with the keenest anticipation, said Blouse.
And now, Perks, please go along with the sergeant and put these two gentlemen back on their way.
Otto sidled up to Polly as they walked back to the cart.
I need to tell you something about your vampire, he said.
Oh, yes?
You are a friend of his? Said Otto.
Yes, said Polly. Is something wrong?
There is a problem.
He's got twitchy because he's run out of coffee.
Alas, if only it was that simple, Otto looked awkward. You have to understand that when a vampire forgoes the B word, there is a process that we call transference. They force themselves to desire something else. For me, this was not painful. I crave the perfection of light and shade. Pictures are my life, but your friend chose coffee, and now he has none.
Oh, I see.
I wonder if you do. It probably seemed so sensible to him. It is a human craving, and no one minds if you say, as it might be, I'm dying for a cup of coffee, or I'd kill for a cup of coffee. But without coffee, he will, I'm afraid, revert. Do you understand, this is very difficult for me to talk about,
Otto trailed off.
By revert, you mean? First, will come mild delusions, I think. A psychic susceptibility to all kinds of influences from who knows where, and vampires can hallucinate so strongly that they can be contagious. I think that is happening already. He will become erratic. This may last for several days, and then his conditioning will break and he will be once again a true vampire. No more Mr. Nice Coffee Drinker Guy.
Can't I do anything to help him?
Otto reverentially laid his picture box in the back of the cart and turned to her.
You can find him some coffee, or you can keep a wooden stake and a big knife ready. You would be doing him a favour, believe me.
I can't do that.
Otto shrugged.
Find someone who will.
He is amazing, said De Word as the cart rocked back down through the trees. I know the Clax is against your religion, but he seems to understand all about it.
Like I said, sir, he assesses stuff, said Jackram, beaming. Mind like a razor.
He was talking about Clax algorithms that the companies are only just now investigating, said De Word. That department he was talking about.
Ah, I can see nothing gets past you, sir, said Jackram. Very hush-hush. Can't talk about it.
To be frank, Sergeant, I'd always assumed that Borogravia was, well, backward.
Jackram's smile was waxy and bright.
If we seem to be a long way back, sir, it's only so's we can get a good run-up.
You know, Sergeant, it's a great shame to see a mind like that wasted, said De Word as the cart lurched in a rut. This is not an age of heroes and famous last stands and death-or-glory charges. Do your men a favour and try to tell him that, will you?
Wouldn't dream of it, sir, said Jackram. Here is your road, sir. Where will you be heading now?
To Kneck Valley, Sergeant.
This is a good story, Sergeant. Thank you. Allow me to shake you by the hand.
Glad to hear you think that, sir, said Jackram, extending his hand.
Polly heard the faint clink of coins in their passage from palm to palm. De Word took the reins.
But I must tell you, Sergeant, that we'll probably send off our stuff by pigeon within the hour, he said. We will have to say you have prisoners.
"Don't worry about that, sir," said Jackram. "By the time their mates come out here to rescue these gallopers, we'll be halfway back to the mountains. Our mountains."
They parted. Jackram watched them out of sight and turned to Polly.
"Him with his airs and graces," he said. "Did you see that? He insulted me by giving me a tip."
He glanced at his palm.
"Hm. 5 Ankh-Morpork dollars. Well, at least he's a man who knows how to insult you handsomely," he added,
and the coins disappeared into his jacket with remarkable speed.
"I think he wants to help us, Sarge,"
said Polly. Jackram ignored that.
"I hate bloody Ankh-Morpork," he said. "Who are they to tell us what to do? Who cares what they think?"
"Do you think we can really join up with deserters, Sarge?"
"Nope. They deserted once. What's to stop 'em a second time? They spat on the Duchess when they deserted. They can't kiss and make up now. You get one kiss, that's all."
"But Lieutenant Blows—"
"The Rupert should stick to his sums. He thinks he's a soldier. Never walked on a battlefield in his life. All that rubbish he gave your man was death or glory stuff. And I'll tell you, Perks, I've seen death more often than I care to remember, but I've never clapped eyes on glory. I'm all for sending the fools to look for us where we ain't, though."
"He's not my man, Sarge," said Polly.
"Yeah, well, you're at home with writing and reading," grumbled Jackram. "You can't trust the people who do that stuff. They mess around with the world, and it turns out everything you know is wrong."
They reached the gully again. The squad had come back from their various hiding places, and most were clustered around one of the newspapers. For the first time, Polly saw the picture. It was actually quite good, especially of Shufti and Wazza. She was mostly hidden by the bulk of Jackram, but you could see the sullen cavalrymen behind them, and their expressions were a picture in themselves.
"It's a good one of Tonka," said Igorina, who didn't lisp so much when there were no officers to hear.
"Do you think having a picture like this is an abomination unto Nuggan?" said Shufti nervously.
"Probably," said Polly absent-mindedly. "Most things are." She ran her eye down the text next to the picture. It was full of phrases like "plucky farm boys" and "humiliation of some of Slovenia's best troops" and "sting in the tail." She could see why it had caused trouble. She rustled through the other pages. They were crammed with strange stories about places she'd never heard of and pictures of people she didn't recognise. But one page was a mass of grey text under a line of much bigger printing which read, "Why this mad state must be stopped." Bewildered, her eye picked up phrases from the sea of letters. "Disgraceful invasions of neighbouring states." "Deluded worshippers of a mad god." "A strutting bully." "Outrage after outrage." "Flying in the face of international opinion."
"Don't you lads read that rubbish. You don't know where it's been," said Sergeant Jackram jovially, arriving behind them. "It'll all be lies. We are leaving right—" "Corporal Maledict!"
Maledict, emerging from the trees, gave a lazy salute. He was still wearing his blanket.
"What are you doing out of uniform?"
"I'm in uniform underneath, Sarge. We don't want to be seen, right? Like this, we become part of the jungle."
"It's a forest, Corporal, and without bloody uniforms, how the hell will we know our friends from our enemies?"
Maledict lit a cigarette before he replied.
"The way I see it, Sarge," he said, "the enemy is everyone but us."
"Just one moment, Sergeant," said Blouse, who had looked up from a newspaper and had been watching the apparition with considerable interest.
"There are precedents in antiquity, you know. General Song Sang Lo moved his army disguised as a field of sunflowers, and General Tacticus once commanded his battalion to dress as spruces."
"Sunflowers!"
said Jackram, his voice oozing with disdain.
"Both actions were successful, Sergeant."
"No uniforms? No badges? No stripes, sir?"
"Possibly you could be an extra-large bloom,"
said Blouse, and his face betrayed no hint of amusement.
"And you have surely carried out actions at night, when all markings are invisible?"
"Yes, sir, but night is night, sir. Well, sunflowers is sunflowers, sir. I've worn this uniform for more than all my life, sir, and sneaking around without a uniform is downright dishonourable. It's for spies, sir."
Jackram's face had gone beyond red into crimson, and Polly was amazed to see tears in the corners of his eyes.
"How can we be spies, Sergeant, in our own country?" said Blouse calmly.
"The LT's got a point, Sarge," said Maledict.
Jackram turned like a bull at bay, and then, to Polly's amazement, he sagged. But she wasn't amazed for long. She knew the man. She didn't know why, but there was something about Jackram that she could read. It was in the eyes. He could lie with eyes as honest and tranquil as those of an angel. And if he appeared to be backing away, it was indeed only to get a run-up later on.
"All right, all right," the sergeant said. "Upon my oath, I am not a man to disobey orders," and his eyes twinkled.
"Well done, sergeant," said Blouse.
Jackram pulled himself together. "I don't want to be a sunflower, though," he said.
"Happily, there are only fir trees in this area, sergeant."
"Point well made, sir." Jackram turned to the awed squad.
"All right, last detail," he bellowed. "You heard the man. Spruce up."
It was an hour later. As far as Polly could tell, they'd started out for the mountains, but had travelled in a wide semicircle, so that they ended up facing back the way they had come, but a few miles away. Was Blouse leading, or had he left it to Jackram? Neither man was complaining. The lieutenant called a halt in a thicket of birch, thus doubling the size of the thicket. You could say that the camouflage effects were effective, because bright red and white show up against greens and greys. Beyond that, though, language tended to run out. Jade had scraped off her paint, and was green and grey anyway. Igor looked like a walking brush. Wazza quivered like an aspen all the time, so her needles rustled permanently. The others had made more or less reasonable attempts, and Polly was pretty proud of her own efforts. Jackram was about as tree-like as a big red rubber ball. Polly suspected that he'd surreptitiously shined up his brasswork too. Every tree held a mug of tea in limb or hand. After all, they'd stopped for 5 minutes. "Men," said Blouse, as if he'd only just reached that conclusion, "you may have gathered that we are heading back toward the mountains to raise a deserter's army there. This story is, in fact, a ruse for the benefit of Mr. De Word." He paused, as if expecting some reaction. They stared at him. He went on, "We are, in fact, continuing our journey to the Kinnec Valley. This is the last thing the enemy will be expecting." Polly glanced at the sergeant. He was grinning. "It is an established fact that a small, light force can get into places that a battalion cannot penetrate," Blouse went on. "Men, we will be that force. Is that not right, Sergeant Jackram?"
"Yes, sir."
"We will come down like a hammer on those forces smaller than us," said Blouse happily.
"Yes, sir."
"And from those that outnumber us, we will merge silently into the forest."
"Yes, sir."
"We will slip past their sentries."
"That's right, sir," said Jackram.
"And take Kinnec Keep from under their noses."
Jackram's tea sprayed across the clearing.
"I dare say our enemy feels impregnable, just because he commands a heavily armed fort on a rocky crag with walls 100 feet high and 20 feet thick," Blouse continued, as if half the trees weren't now dripping tea. "But he is in for a surprise."
"You are right, Sarge," whispered Polly. Jackram was making strange little noises in his throat.
"Does anyone have any questions?" said Blouse.
Igorina raised a branch.
"How will we get in, Thar?" she said.
"Ah, good question," said Blouse. "All will become apparent in due time."
"Aerial cavalry," said Maledict.
"Pardon, Corporal?"
"Flying machines, sir," said Maledict. "They won't know where to expect us. We touch down in a handy LZ, take them out, and then dust off."
Blouse's clear brow wrinkled a little.
"Flying machine?" he said.
"I saw a picture of one by someone called Leonard of Quorum. A sort of a flying windmill. It's just like a big screw up in the sky."
"I don't think we need one of those, although the advice is welcome," said Blouse.
"Not when we've got a big screw up down here, sir," Jackram managed. "Sir, this is just a bunch of recruits, sir. All that stuff about honour and freedom and that was just for the writer man, right?" "Good idea, sir, yeah. Let's get to Kinnec Valley. Let's sneak in and join the rest of the lads. That's where we ought to be, sir. You can't be serious about taking the keep, sir. I wouldn't try that with 1,000 men.
"I might try it with 6, sergeant."
Jackram's eyes bulged.
"Really, sir? What'll Private Goom do? Tremble at them? Young Igor will stitch him up, will he? Private Halter will give them a nasty look? They're promising lads, sir, but they're not men."
General Tacticus said the fate of a battle may depend upon the actions of one man in the right place, Sergeant, said Blouse calmly.
And having a lot more soldiers than the other bugger, sir, Jackram insisted. Sir, we should get to the rest of the army. Maybe it's trapped, maybe it isn't. All that stuff about them not wanting to slaughter us, sir, that makes no sense. The idea is to win, sir. If the rest of them have stopped attacking, it's because they're frightened of us. We should be down there. That's the place for young recruits, sir, where they can learn. The enemy is looking for them, sir.
If General Frock is among those captured, the keep will be where he is held, said Blouse. I believe he was the first officer you served under as a sergeant, am I right?
Jackram hesitated. That's right, sir, he said eventually. And he was the dumbest lieutenant I've ever met, bar one.
I am positive there is a secret entrance into the keep, Sergeant.
Polly's memory nudged her. If Paul was alive, he was in the keep. She caught Shufti's eye. The girl nodded. She'd been thinking along the same lines. She didn't talk much about her fiancé, and Polly wondered how official the arrangement was.
Permission to speak, Sarge, she said.
Okay, Perks.
I'd like to find a way into the keep, Sarge.
Perks, are you volunteering to attack the biggest, strongest castle within 500 miles, single-handed?
I'll go too, said Shufti.
Oh, two of you, said Jackram. Oh, well, that's all right, then.
I'll go, said Wazza. The Duchess has told me that I should.
Jackram looked down at Wazza's thin little face and watery eyes and sighed. He turned back to Blouse. Let's get a move on, sir, shall we? We can talk about this later. At least we're headed to Knek, first stop on the road to hell. Perks and Igor, you take point. Maledict, yo! You scout on ahead. I hear ya. Good.
As the vampire walked past Polly, the world just for a moment changed. The forest became greener, the sky greyer, and she heard a noise overhead like whoop-whoop-whoop-whoop, and then it was gone. Vampire hallucinations are contagious, she thought. What's going on in his head? She hurried forward with Igorina, and they set off again through the forest. Birds sang. The effect was peaceful, if you didn't know about birdsong, but Polly could recognise the alarm calls close by and the territorial threats far off, and everywhere the preoccupation with sex. That took the edge off the pleasure. It's hard to be an ornithologist and walk through a wood when all around you the world is shouting, "Bugger off, this is my bush! Ah, the best thief! Have sex with me, I can make my chest big and red!"
Polly, said Igorina.
Hmm?
Could you kill someone if you had to?
Polly came right back to the here and now. What sort of question is that to ask anyone?
I think it's the sort you'd ask a soldier, said Igorina.
I don't know. If they were attacking me, I suppose. Hurt them hard enough to keep them lying down anyway. And you?
We have a great respect for life, Polly, said Igorina solemnly. It's easy to kill someone, and almost impossible to bring them back again.
Almost.
Well, if you don't have a really good lightning rod, and even if you have, they're never quite the same. Cutlery tends to stick to them.
Igorina, why are you here?
The clan isn't very keen on girls getting too involved in the great work, said Igorina, looking downcast. Stick to your needlework, my mother keeps saying. Well, that's all very fine, but I know I'm good at the actual incisions as well, especially the fiddly bits. And I think a woman on the slab would feel a lot better about things if she knew there was a female hand on the we belong dead switch. So I thought some battlefield experience would convince my father. Soldiers aren't choosy about who saves their lives.
I suppose men are the same the world over, said Polly.
On the inside, certainly.
And, you really can put your hair back. Polly had seen it in its jar when they'd been breaking camp. It had spun gently in its bottle of green liquid like some fine, rare seaweed.
Oh, yes, scalp transplants are easy. It stings a bit for a couple of minutes, that's all.
There was a movement between the trees, and then the blur resolved itself into Maledict. He held a finger to his lips as he drew closer, and then whispered urgently, "Jarl is dragging us." Polly and Igorina looked at one another. "Who's Charlie?" Maledict stared at them, and then rubbed his face distractedly.
"I'm sorry, sorry, it's... Oh, look, we're being followed, I know it."
The sun was setting. Polly peered over the rocky ledge, back the way they had come. She could make out the track, golden and red in the late afternoon light. Nothing was moving. The outcrop was near the top of another rounded hill. The rear of it became the floor of a little enclosed space, surrounded by bushes. It made a good lookout for people who wanted to see without being seen, and it had done so in the recent past by the look of the old fires. Maledict was sitting with his head in his hands, with Jackram and Blouse on either side of him. They were trying to understand, and not making much progress.
"So you can't hear anything?" said Blouse.
"No. And you didn't see anything and can't smell anything," said Jackram.
"Oh, no, I told you, but there is something after us, watching us." "But if you can't," Blouse began.
"Look, I'm a vampire," panted Maledict. "Just trust me, okay?"
"I thought, Tharge," said Igorina from behind Jackram, "we Igors often serve vampires. In times of stress, their personal space can extend as much as 10 miles from their body."
There was the usual pause that followed an extended lisp. People need time to think.
"Stress," said Blouse. "You know how you can feel that someone's looking at you," mumbled Maledict. "Well, it's like that times 1,000. And it's not a feeling, it's something I know."
"Lots of people are looking for us, Corporal," said Blouse, patting him kindly on the shoulder. "It doesn't mean that they'll find us."
Polly, looking down on the gold-lit woodland, opened her mouth to speak. It was dry. Nothing came out. Maledict shook the lieutenant's hand away.
"This person isn't looking for us. They know where we are."
Polly forced saliva into her mouth and tried again.
"Movement!"
And then it wasn't there any more. She'd have sworn there had been something on the path, something that merged with the light, revealing itself only by the changing, wavering pattern of shadows as it moved.
Perhaps not, she muttered.
"Look, we've all lost sleep and we're all a little strung out," said Blouse. "Let's just keep things down, shall we?" "I need coffee," moaned Maledict, rocking back and forth.
Polly squinted at the distant pathway. The breeze was shaking the trees and red-gold leaves were drifting down. For a moment there was just a suggestion. She got to her feet. Stare at shadows and waving branches for long enough and you could see anything. It was like looking at pictures in the fire.
"Okay," said Shufti, who'd been working over the fire. "This might do it. It smells like coffee anyway. Well, quite like coffee. Well, quite like coffee, if coffee was made from acorns anyway."
She'd roasted some acorns. At least the woods had plenty of them at this time of year, and everyone knew that roasted, ground acorns could be substituted for coffee, didn't they? Polly had agreed that it was worth a try, but as far as she could recall, no one had ever, given the choice, said,
"No, I will not touch horrible coffee any more. It's a long black ground acorn substitute for me, with extra floating gritty bits."
She took the mug from Shufti and carried it over to the vampire. As she bent down, the world changed. Wop, 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 wop. The sky was a haze of dust, turning the sun into a blood-red disk. For a moment, Polly saw them in the sky. Giant, fat screws spinning in the air, hovering in the air, but drifting slowly toward her.
"He's having flash sides," whispered Igorina at her elbow.
"Flash sides?"
"Like someone else's flashbacks. We don't know anything about them. They could come from anywhere. A vampire at this stage is open to all sorts of influences. Give him the coffee, please."
Maledict grabbed the mug and tried to down the contents so quickly that they spilled down his chin. They watched him swallow.
"It tastes like mud," he said, putting down the mug.
"Yes, but is it working?"
Maledict looked up and blinked.
Ye gods, but this stuff is gruesome.
Are we in a forest or a jungle? Any flying screws? Igorina demanded. How many fingers am I holding up?
You know, that's something an Igor should never say, said Maledict, grimacing. But the feelings aren't so strong. I can suck it down. I can gut it out.
Polly looked at Igorina, who shrugged and said, That's nice, and motioned to Polly to join her a little way off. He, or possibly she, is right on the edge, she said.
Well, we all are, said Polly. We're hardly getting any sleep.
You know what I mean. I've taken the liberty of being prepared.
Wordlessly, Igorina let her jacket fall open just for a moment. Polly saw a knife, a wooden stake, and a hammer in neatly stitched little pockets.
It's not going to come to that, is it?
I hope not, said Igorina. But if it does, I'm the only one who can reliably find the heart. People always think it's more to the left than...
It's not going to come to that, said Polly firmly.